Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, the special edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 3rd of April 2013. We're not going to discuss sports tonight. We have a special report, something that I think that needs to be addressed. Needs to be addressed around all our communities, not only African American communities, but every community in general. I'm joined by Renee Burgess. Renee, thank you. Renee, thank you for joining the program. Welcome to the Cyril Quinn Review.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I'm always interested in your shows, especially the basketball ones, but yeah.
Well, you know, as you all know from past shows, Renee has been a contributor to the program. She once did a lot of musical reviews for us in the past, different CDs that would come out, you know, every Tuesday, and she did a wonderful job with that. And despite the fact that she is a Boston Celtics fan, forget about that tonight. We'll put that aside tonight and kind of be on the same side, be on the same team tonight in terms of doing this particular program. Again, this is for, and I will say, I will emphasize this, and I put this on my, I put this on in terms of tour audience. This program is something I recommend that you talk about with, you know, if you want to talk about with 10-year-olds, then that's fine. And I would recommend this program be discussed only with adults, young adults and young adults. It is intended for mature audiences, so I don't want to hear anybody talking about, well, my child called, you know, my child heard what's supposed to be in this. I put it out there that it was intended for mature audiences. So it's something that you want to discuss with your child, and so be it. That's certainly their prerogative, and I'm certainly encouraged, as a matter of fact. So what we're going to be talking about for the next hour or so, or what as a story, and a story I feel like needs to be told in terms of age in America. Renee's going to tell her story, and I will leave her to it. Renee, how long has it been HIV positive?
It's a little over 5 years now, since November 21st, 2007.
So, if you may, how did you how did you contract the HIV virus?
Well, I was infected by my now ex-husband. He knew that he had been HIV positive since August of 2002. Never disclosed his status to anyone. Decided that he was going to marry me, and I found out during my prenatal labs when I became pregnant after we got married.
Okay, so he infected you without telling you, and without disclosing this. Now, and you got hit obviously with a double whammy. A lot of people get AIDS because of a blood transfusion, or they'll go to the doctors or a physical and things of that nature. And it's one thing to have the virus, but another thing to, you know, get contracted by someone who you love and someone who loves you. Talk about, at that particular moment or moment, what were your thoughts on when you were found out you had HIV, when you were found out you were HIV positive?
When I found out, I went through all the emotions. My initial one was just total shock, because I'm like you said, this is somebody, you know, you marry, you love this person, and for them to do something like that, it leaves you completely speechless and just numb to what's going on at the moment. But, you know, I went through probably every emotion in the book of emotions. It was something that I dealt with emotionally for a while until I was able to just, you know, realize I needed to move forward and not let it bring me down. I had to ultimately take control of it and not let it take control of me.
So you get past that point where you've, you know, settled down, you've, you know, been settled down in terms of your what your reality is. What were your what did you immediately go through from a medical standpoint? First of all, before I even get to that, how educated were you at that point on HIV and what it was all about?
I had been educated on it for a while, probably since I had been a teenager. But I was working in the medical field previously before we got married. I was doing medical assistant work and phlebotomy work, so I was very knowledgeable of it anyway. So I just, you know, took that knowledge I had and whatever questions I had, I took them with me when I went up, whenever I went to the doctor. So if it was something I didn't know and I wanted to know, I made sure I asked.
You are, from what I understand, you are a motivational speaker.
Yes. Okay. I go out. I get asked to come to different events. I've spoken to groups all the way from down the ages, like 13, 14, all the way up until, you know, elderly. So there's no real limit to who I speak to because everybody needs this education. Everybody needs to know about it. So, you know, I go out, I speak, do different events. Even if it's just showing my face and showing support, I do that also.
Based on the different venues you speak at, the different people you come across, whether it's young people, whether it's older people, do you find that people are well educated about HIV in America?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Based on the different venues that you speak at and the different people that you speak to, do you find them to be well educated about HIV in America?
A lot of people, actually, believe it or not, a lot of people are educated on HIV and AIDS. It's a lot of people I come in contact with, it's more so where they're trying to find out how they can help those who are educated on it. I mean, I do run across that, you know, that handful who, you know, may not know everything or they could be newly diagnosed and just don't know where to turn to. And I make sure I get them in the right direction. But I've learned that a lot more people are educating themselves because, I mean, you got to look at it. It's almost to the point where it's now like every one in four people are you know, infected. So you're thinking you got a room of 100 people. In that room, count every fourth person, and that's how many people in that room are possibly HIV positive. You know, so
absolutely,
Everybody's trying to get that education in.
No question about it. Here are a couple stats that just, when I first saw them, kind of blew me away as far as some of these numbers. One in every 16 black men will be diagnosed with AIDS during their lifetime. You have 34 million people around the world are HIV positive. You have 30 million people since 1981 have died from AIDS. And these were the stats that just really... that really kind of just shocked me. Black men with HIV and less than 12th grade education die at a rate of 53 every per 100,000, compared to white men with similar education dying at a rate of 5 per 100,000, Hispanics dying at a rate of 9 per 100,000, black women dying at a rate of 27 per 100,000 versus white women dying at a rate of 2 per 100,000, which tells you that, you know, the HIV, you know, will attack anybody, but it has been prevalent in the African American communities. Are you happy in terms of what African Americans are doing within the communities besides yourself in terms of educating young people and just people all alike about HIV?
No, I'm not satisfied because, I mean, where they're trying to start the education is the wrong place to try to start the education. They're wanting to start the education, you know, when you're already an adult. And I think it needs to start in school. I mean, you know, you have health class and you have all these different, you know, chapters in the book. And I remember, you know, being in school and being in health class, that chapter that was in the book, it was probably one page that talked about HIV and AIDS, and then it just went on to everything else in the health book. So, I mean, I think that it really needs to start as probably early as middle school, sixth grade. It needs to start because you have children, you know, you have these preteens that are having sex and most times aren't using protection because they just haven't went through that point of really understanding their body. They're just doing it because everybody else is doing it. So I think the education, it needs to, a lot more needs to be done to put it out there and make it aware as early as, you know, as, you know, preteens.
Why do you think, and that's a very good point, and I for the life of me don't understand why it doesn't start earlier on than, say, high school or even middle school. Why do you think why do you think that people are kind of like ignoring it, so to speak, in terms of not educating young people within the school? Considering how many people are dying and how many people contract AIDS every year?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's just there. I don't know if it's just that because they don't really know that much about it, that they don't know how to tell it to, you know, children, to the preteens. Because that's a lot of instances, you know, I've taken it upon myself. I've emailed every principal. I'm in Jacksonville, Florida. I've emailed every principal in from middle school and high school. And I actually started with high school, and I have not gotten one email reply back because I'm trying to implement a program to go into the schools to talk to the, you know, the each grade levels in the high school so
right.
that they can have that education before they get out into the real world. Because once they get out there, guess what? They're out there. And they may not have the knowledge, and they may not know, hey, I need to look out for this stuff. Because it's not just HIV and AIDS. It's all the other stuff, too, all the other STDs that are out there. And so they, you know, it all starts with education. That's just ultimately where it has to start. And a lot of people just not willing to get that education on it because they're like, oh, well, it's not going to happen to me, not realizing that, hey, it could be happening to anybody. You know, so that's one of the big issues I think it comes when it comes to trying to educate.
So give me a roundabout figure of how many. You said you emailed all the high schools in Jacksonville. Give me like a roundabout figure of how many. Yes, how many that you emailed?
Oh,
in terms of
gosh. How many high schools are probably in Jacksonville? Oh, gosh. Had to be probably, it's probably over 20 high schools.
It was over 20.
There's a lot of high schools here. Yeah.
And not one reply.
And the one person I did speak with that I know that works at one of the high schools, the first thing they said, well, oh, you might want to contact Community and Schools, which is a program they have where they have mentors that go in and tutor and that stuff. And I'm like, why would I contact them? I'm not trying to tutor. I'm trying to educate. I'm trying
right.
to bring a program into the school, not bring something after school. Because guess what? These kids aren't going to want to stay after school. Their parents aren't going to want them to stay after school. So let's catch them while they're in school. Let's bring them into the gym or wherever and have them assemble so they can sit there and listen. You know, because half of the time they're not doing anything in class anyway, which is sad to say too. You know, so why not take that time while they're in school and while they're there to talk to them, even if they only hear it one time. At least you know that one time they heard it in their high school, you know, while they're in high school, may have that impact on them once they get into the real world.
Wow. Around your particular area, are there a lot of churches going out and trying to promote not promote, but I'm saying trying to educate people on HIV, or are they kind of standing back?
There's probably a handful of churches that are actually trying to make a difference and trying to help the community with bringing the numbers of newly diagnosed down to zero. A lot of churches don't like to bring that in. Why, I don't know. I mean, that's one of the main places you would think that they would want to at least have that, because, you know, when it all boils down to it, you know, the church is in the community. You have the people in the community. You have, you know, neighborhoods of people that are infected. They're coming into your church. So why not, you know, let that be something that is in the church also? Because I know there is a church that, while I was down in Orlando, I went to. And one thing that made me go to that church when researching churches to go to was the fact that they had a health ministry, which a lot of churches don't have. But this church had a health ministry, and then when I read about the health ministry, they do different things. They have they did different things, and it included HIV and AIDS. So that drew me to the church, you know, and that's one of the few churches that do that. But why they don't do it is they just don't want to talk about it. It's still that thing where people don't want to talk about it. They want to sweep it under the rug.
Do you find, talk about yourself as far as the physical and mental grind on data, in terms of data, your daily grind. Do you religiously take certain types of medicines? Are you on a strict eating schedule? You're not eating schedule, but in terms of diet, in terms of what you choose to eat, what you can't eat. Talk about that for a few minutes.
I mean, when it comes to eating good and making sure I'm taking care of myself, of course, taking my medicine, which is only one pill once a day. And then you have, when it all boils down to it, it's all about your immune system. Because if you know the acronyms for AIDS, you know acquired immune deficiency syndrome. So basically it's saying that your immune system is, you know, it's being put at jeopardy. So if you can do the things in your daily lifestyle when it comes to eating and everything you do to keep your immune system up, then, you know, most people won't ever have a problem or complication from their status, you know. And just to kind of go back to what you were saying when you were reading about the stats about how people are dying from AIDS, what I want everybody to understand is you don't die from AIDS itself. AIDS is not, how do I put it? Like HIV, you know, is a disease.
Right.
AIDS is not technically a disease. AIDS is kind of like the things that your body goes through because it can't build that immune system up. So it's not technically, when people go into AIDS status, it's because their immune system is to the point where it can't fight anything.
Right.
So it's not actually AIDS is not actually a disease itself. It's a syndrome that your body's going through before actually, you know, most people, they die from it. So you may not die from AIDS. You're not going to die from AIDS. You may die from, say, getting pneumonia.
Exactly. Getting
pneumonia, you know, from that. And a lot of people miss, you know, they misunderstand. Because I have people that tell me, I have people that think that HIV and AIDS are the same thing. I'm like, no, they're two separate things.
Yeah, explain
you
that.
Know?
Explain for those who don't know, explain the differences between HIV and AIDS.
Okay, well, I kind of just went over what AIDS was.
Right.
It's not a actual disease. It's a syndrome. But with HIV, that is the actual disease. And what that does, it gets into your body and it attacks your white blood cells. It attacks your blood cells, your T cells, which are your helper cells that help you fight off infection. It attacks those. And it may not initially attack it. What it'll do, it'll go to it, it'll replicate and make a copy. So your body's thinking that, okay, this is nothing that's harming me, because the HIV virus has replicated and made itself to look like a regular T helper cell.
Right.
So once it decides it wants to actually take over, it will, that's when it will actually come out of that cell and and attack the cell. Because, like, you know how most people say, oh, I didn't find out for years, you know, or they, you know, it took years before they actually found out they had it, which is because that cell can lie as dormant, as it can lie dormant as long as it wants to before
right.
it decides it wants to attack the body. So that's kind of the difference. The HIV is actually a virus that's in the body, and then AIDS is just, you know, basically it's kind of like what happens when your body can't fight anymore, fight off the infections and fight off of that stuff.
So basically, you know, it gets to a point to where it kills your white blood cells to a point to where you can't even fight off basically, say, a common cold.
Exactly. That's what it does because, I mean, and that's why they tell everybody it's so important if you are HIV positive to take your medicines because if the doctor's always giving you different medicines because you're not taking the one they gave you before, eventually, there are people in this world right now who they went through so many medications and didn't want to take them the way they were supposed to that they can't take any medication. And they're basically, I hate to say it, but they're basically living to die, so to speak, because they can't take any medicine to help them stay healthy, and their immune system is only going to get worse and worse. So that's why they always say, make sure you take your medicine and do what you're supposed to do.
Now, everybody's body responds differently to, you know, everybody's body responds differently to the virus or to medicines. Medicines that might work. Now, I'm asking you a question. I'm not making a statement. Ask you a question.
Mm-hmm,
about this.
Right.
Medicines that might work for person A might not work the same for, say, person B. Would that be correct?
That's correct because. I mean, like, everybody's body is different. What they do to determine, they do a test that determines what medicines your body is resistant to versus what will actually work for your body. And then a lot of the HIV meds have sulfur in it. So, for instance, I have a friend who's positive who's allergic to sulfur. So he can't take half of the medicine that they have out because it has sulfur in it.
Wow.
You know, so he's really limited to a lot of what he can take. And with the medicines, they're all in combinations. Like, I may take one pill once a day, but in that one pill, there's three medicines in that one pill.
Okay.
And that's the minimum amount of pills anybody can take, whether they're taking the one pill that has three medicines in it or they're taking one pill that's one medicine, but they're taking three in that one day. Three is the minimum amount of meds that any person that is on meds, because I'll say this too, not everybody has to take meds. If your immune system is built up and is strong and able to fight it, some people don't even have to take medication.
Right.
And that's the thing too. A lot of people don't know. They think everybody has to take medication. Everybody doesn't. It's just how well your immune system fights off the virus.
There's a perception. I mentioned his name earlier before, obviously because I'm not because I'm a Laker fan, but because he changed the whole perception. He changed everything in terms of HIV, in terms of AIDS, and as far as people knowing about it or people paying attention, I should say. And so Magic
right.
Johnson in 1991, before that it was a perception that it was just a gay disease, and it was a lot of stigma. It was a lot of stereotypes that were not true. That came before the Magic made his announcement. The reason why I bring Magic Johnson up is there's a perception that he, you know, because of the kind of money he has and all the medicines that he has, that he has an advantage, so to speak, over the regular Joe. He's dispelled that notion at all. He says that you know, people who have regular benefits and insurance can get the same types of medicines that he can get. Do you find that to be true? How much stock do you put into that? Is that true or not?
I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, everybody tries to say, oh, he's cured, he's not cured. He'll tell anybody his status is undetectable, which means the virus isn't replicating in his body, which is the same as my status. But, I mean, the medication is, they have programs. They're called, I don't want to say it wrong. They're like, they have like the Ryan White program, and they have different organizations. Like they have aid service organizations that help a lot of people get access to these programs. Like ADP is a program, which Ryan White's under that, where if you're low income or you don't have or you're not able to get the Medicaid that, because with Medicaid, Medicaid covers your medicine 100%.
Right.
But if you know anything about Medicaid, most times men, for some reason, it's kick men out to the curb. A lot of men can't get Medicaid. So they have, you know, Ryan White is, you know, for the men, because if they have, if they're eligible, their income is, you know, at a certain amount, they're eligible for that Ryan White, and that gives them access to the medications at no cost to them. And but then it's all about also making sure that you keep your Ryan White up to date, or whatever, you know, assistance they give you, keep it up to date, because the funds are limited. So once you're in there, it's important to stay with it and stick with it, because once you get off of it, it can be hard to get back on based on the funds, because every state gets a different amount of funding. And I hate to say it also, the funding that the states get are based on the number of cases.
Right.
I was actually watching a movie earlier today. It's on Netflix. It's called House of Numbers. So if anybody, you know, check that movie out. I was watching it then. It was an eye-opener for me also, because it was things that I had been thinking about. You know, the government, you got to think about it. All this stuff before AIDS came out, which before it was called AIDS, it was called GRID. Before it came out, everything was kind of dying down, you know, the different outbreaks that were happening in, like, the 60s and 70s, all that stuff was dying down. And it was almost as if they were looking for something to boost up the revenue in the CDC, you know. So, and you know, with the pharmaceutical companies also, because if there's no reason to give out medication, then the pharmaceutical companies are losing money. And it almost makes you think that it was a money thing, but nobody can still to this day really say where the virus started or where it even came from. They make assumptions or they throw something out there just so the question isn't brought up. But
right.
In actuality, nobody knows. Or somebody
right.
knows, but whoever knows, for all we know, that person can be dead.
Exactly.
You know? So it's just, it makes you think of a whole lot of different things, because yeah, we got all these millions, not even thousands, millions of people, and there's still so many unanswered questions. And that's what's the scary part about it. Like, well, how can you have all these unanswered questions with all these millions of people that are infected now?
So you don't buy the standpoint, you don't buy the fact, I shouldn't say the fact, but you don't buy the idea that the AIDS virus came from West Africa, because I was doing a lot of research on you know, on the virus and on AIDS and the origins, everything pointed towards it coming from Africa. Now, there's, again, there are a number of cases in Africa, West South Africa, in terms of AIDS cases, but who really knows where it started from? To me, that can't be just a cold hard fact that you take in and say this is definitely it is. This is just the information that's been presented to us. So you don't buy that. You don't necessarily buy that.
No, because you got to think about it. And if you watch that movie, it also goes in that too. You got to look at, okay, back then they didn't even really know how to actually test for it. You know, in the video, the guy was overseas in one of the other countries. Actually, he was in South Africa, I believe. And he was going and getting a test. And there they had three tests. Now, this, I laughed so hard at this. They had three tests. One test where if that test came back positive, then they did another test. If the other test came back negative, then they did the third test. Now, the third test is supposed to be the test that gives you your final definite result. And the guy was like, well, okay, if one test is giving you this and the other one's this, why not just do the last test that's supposed to be the most accurate? And the lady was like, when he said that, she was like, well, if we just do that one test, then how are we going to know which one of these are? And he just laughed, and I laughed too because I'm like, that makes no sense. If you got one test that's supposed to give you what your final status is, then why not just do that one test? You know, and it was they were all quick tests, you know, with the 15-minute results. But it just was so funny because every country is different. Because, like, for example, I can be positive here in the United States and I could cross this Canadian state line and be negative.
Wow.
Every country has their own, every country has their own thing when it comes to what they consider you to be HIV positive or not. Because even in some countries, they don't even test. If you get skinny and you look like you sick and you have sores on you, they'll just say, oh, that person has HIV or they have AIDS. And it could just be an issue of third world country malnutrition.
Right.
You know, and that's what I think a lot of, I think that's what happened early on in Africa, too. A lot of it was not necessarily the HIV and AIDS, but it was malnutrition.
Let's be honest here, Renee. Africa, as we know, has a lot of, like you said, you just mentioned malnutrition. There's a lot of starving countries. Africa could have been used as a scapegoat. I mean, that's all it is.
Right.
Considering how many starving people are. Like, to make a generalization and say every person who's skinny or looks at malnutrition has HIV is the most insane thing, ridiculous thing I ever heard. And
right.
I'm not saying that generalization was made, but it seems like it's, to a standpoint that was made. If you want to, if you go to Wikipedia, if you go to these different research. These different researchers and say, well, it came from South Africa or it came from Africa. So it seems like that generalization was made that, you know, every starving person had AIDS or AIDS started there, which is just, that's a whole nother conversation, but even it still connects to AIDS.
Right.
It still connects to AIDS. It's really unfortunate.
Right. Yeah, and I actually have someone I know that went over there and did some work in the HIV and AIDS clinic there. In Kenya, and this is what really trips me out, which makes me, like you say, think that they used it as a scapegoat because they give everybody there the same medicine. Now, remember,
right.
I just told you everybody can't tolerate the same medicine, but there, everybody gets the same combination medicine. And it's almost like a similar line. They just come in, get their medicine, and they go. Come in, get the medicine, and go. They don't give anybody any type of different combination of medicine. So that's what makes me look at it like, okay, well, if they're doing that, then how do they know this person even is tolerating this medicine? How do they know that it's even working on them?
Right.
You know, and it's just, it's like, come on. That's what really makes me think, okay, all these people in Africa can't necessarily all be infected. Because if you look at AIDS, when they first named it AIDS here in the United States before they even knew about HIV, look at it then. They were giving everybody one medication, AZT. People were dying from this medicine. They were fine. It was some people who actually stopped taking the medicine because it was making them so sick. And they lived. And everybody else who was taking it, One person, when I was watching that movie, had died within 37 days of actually starting the medication. That 37 day, they died just from the medication alone, was killing people. So
Wow. That's
another reason why the numbers early on were so high, because they still didn't know. Then they start, you know, experimenting with these different medicines. And I'll tell anybody today, just like they had the incident where they were saying the infant was cured and all this stuff, they're never going to find, if they find a cure, I'm not going to be the first one to take it. I'll tell anybody that up front. I'm not going to be the first one. I'll let y'all experiment on it first, you know, but then, because it's so many different strands. No two people have the same strand of HIV.
Right.
No two people have the same. So if you're going to make a cure, that means, guess what? The cure you make for this strand may not work for the cure you make for that strand. And if you got millions of people, you got to make millions of cures.
I was just about to say that. I was just about to ask you about a cure. Are you surprised how long that's taken? Are you surprised that that cure has not been found yet? That's first.
I'm not surprised. No, I mean it's all about money. It's that ultimately that's what I feel like it's boiled down to. Because you got to look at it. You got the pharmaceutical companies, you got the CDC, you got all of these people who are benefiting from the fact that all of these millions of people need this medication. One of my 30-day supplies of medication is
$2,165.88. Wow.
For 30-day supply. So you look at that in 1 year. You know, look, that's how much money they're making, whether it's coming out of my pocket or whether it's coming out of the state's pocket or whoever. You know, they're making that money. They're not going to want to find a cure, because if they find a cure, guess what? Once they get that cure out, nobody's going to need this medicine. Nobody's going to need to go to the doctor as regularly as they go, because right now, when you're HIV positive, you're at the doctor's every 3 months because they're checking you. You know, every 3 to 4 months, they're doing lab work. So they're not going to – I seriously think they're not going to want to try to find a cure because it's too much benefit on their end.
People, here's what Renee is talking about, and I'm glad she mentioned that. The National Institutes of Health spends only 3% of their budget in regards to AIDS on a cure, which is $56 million. That means they spend $560 million on vaccines. So, again, the money, like Renee is explaining, the money is not in the cure, it's in the medicine. I remember, and the reason I thought about this, I remember one of Chris Rock's earlier comedy specials, and he says, you know, he's joking, you know, he's telling jokes and what have you. He says,
right.
He's like, you know, they ain't going to never find a cure for AIDS. He's like, the money's not in the cure, it's in the medicine. I mean, I remember this, like, it has to be at least 13, 14 years
yeah.
ago. And you're laughing at the time, you know, you're laughing at the time of that, but it's true. I mean, it is business, it is money, and money, you know, money does control a lot of things that go along in the world and along with in this country as well. So there is, I mean, because you think about it, when AIDS first really came about in the 80s, say in the late 70s, early 80s, really in the 80s, it was basically, if you contracted AIDS, then, you know, you were dead. That was it. There was no, you know, that was automatic death. So you go from that to now being able to not only live with AIDS, but function with AIDS. You can, you know, live a regular life, basically, if you take care of yourself, exercise, do the right things. So if you can go from a death knell to basically being able to live with AIDS, you think medicine, modern medicine improves every year. You think that they would be able to find a cure to go from living with AIDS to being cured by AIDS by now. And it's been well over 40 years now. So, it gives you a sense that they're really not trying to find a cure, that they, you know, their sales, they'll say, hey, we contributed $50 million toward cure, but $56 million is nothing. In the grand scheme of a budget, it's nothing.
Now, here's the kicker, because here in Florida, they're wanting to pass a bill to cut HIV and AIDS funding.
Wow.
So what does that tell you? Think about that now. I thought about that when I first heard about it. I'm like, okay, too many people are able to live that long life that you just mentioned and live to be, you know, probably longer than somebody who's considered to be healthy.
Right.
You know, and because of the medicine. So now guess what? You cut the funding, you cut the access to what the people are able to get the medicine. And that's going to do what? Make them sicker, make them have to go back to the doctor, make them take more medicine, which means more money coming back in. Because right now they are losing a lot of money because so many people are being so healthy. And like I said, a lot of people don't even have to take medicine. You know, so...
What you're saying is, let's say somebody, okay, let's put the people who don't have to take medicine aside, put them aside for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been taking your medicine, you've been really, you know, strict in terms of being taking the right medicines and been, you know, taking it every day, and you're getting healthier per se. And we know that there's not a cure. We know that it's not coming out your body, but it's just not replicating.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the best case scenario if you have HIV, that it doesn't replicate throughout your body, that it's just that it stays in one place. If these people are getting better, then a doctor might say, hey, you know, we're going to ease back your medicine. We're going to, instead of taking four pills, you're going to have to take two pills. So is that possible? Is that what you're talking about as far as, you know, as far as these medical companies, pharmaceutical companies losing money?
Well, no, but they can't technically, if they cut back on the pills, then you're losing now. They can't, once they find that regimen, they can't necessarily, like, take away from that regimen, because then it's really not going to work. But what I'm saying is, like, cutting the funding would be for those who are being newly diagnosed.
Okay.
That's where the issue is going to come in for those that are newly diagnosed. That's why they started a campaign this year where they're trying to get the education out there so we could get the number of newly infected down to zero.
So let me get this. Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Let me get this straight. Once you are put on a particular specific regimen, no matter mm-hmm. how healthy you start getting, you have to stick with that regimen.
Unless for whatever reason your body becomes resistant to that medicine. Because, I mean, a medicine can work for somebody for, say, 10 years, and then all of a sudden something else in their body could change where they start maybe having an issue with something else. Because a lot of the medicines do have side effects. Now, they have one medicine that I know has, because I've taken it before, and it has a horrible side effect that affects your liver, and it's called Norvir. And when I was taking it, it was in a capsule form that you had to actually keep in the refrigerator. So when you took it, it was cold. And for me taking it, by the time I got ready to swallow, the capsule was like, oh, it burst open in my mouth, and it's the most horrible taste you ever want to experience.
Right.
But that medicine had a side effect for your liver. My whites of my eyes were turning yellow, and it was just horrible. And a lot of people now still take that medicine. It still has a side effect. So a lot of the medicines, over time, you're taking them, they do cause other things. That's why I was saying, you know, when a person finally gets to that AIDS status, it's because of what the other medicines have already done. Guess what? You're taking this medicine, 10, 15 years, now here your liver's acting up, so now you got to take medicine for your liver or, you know, any other things that the side effects can have. So that's what I'm saying. That's why I feel like, I mean, yeah, this disease is out here, and we're trying to keep it from getting any worse than it is. But when it comes to the medicines are only keeping it, it's keeping the funds in rotation for the ones behind the scene who are making the medicines, like, you know, the pharmaceuticals, CDC, and all those people. It's keeping it going for them, but it's making it worse for everybody else.
When you first acquired the virus, how did people respond to you as far as, I don't want to say friends or family, but I'm just, like, community members, people within, you know, coworkers. What was the response like when you first acquired the virus and you made it public, basically, that you had the virus?
I guess for me, being the way that I was infected, that I hate to say it because there's so many other people who didn't get the response that I got, but I really didn't have a lot of people who looked at me in a negative way because it was nothing that I did wrong. I wasn't out being promiscuous. I wasn't on drugs. I wasn't, you know, doing a lot of the things that most people who get infected did. So, you know, it was like, okay, you know, she wasn't doing anything wrong. And I got a lot of support once everybody started finding out and it was out there. But a lot of people don't have that. You have some people who get the negativity from family and friends. I mean, I had a couple people. I say I may have had one or two who kind of backed away, but then once they understood, hey, they kind of talked back into the picture, apologized, and moved forward, you know.
Right.
Because everybody's not going to be comfortable with it. And it goes all back to their education. They may not have known enough information about it to be comfortable with people knowing, hey, that's my friend, until they probably sat down and looked online or something and said, okay, well, you know, I could be around her and nothing's going to happen to me. You know, so I hate to say it, but a lot of people don't get that positive motivation that they need from other people around them, family and friends.
This is definitely true. I mean, unfortunately, there's still myths and stereotypes around the disease that, you know, should have been put aside years ago. But there's still those types. There's just still those myths among, you know, about the disease. What are some of the myths that you personally would like to dispel about the disease?
I mean, a lot of people have that whole misconception about, oh, if I kiss this person, or if they spit on me, or they sneeze, or crying, you know, tears, just stuff like that. People think, oh, it's in tears, it's in spit, it's in, you know, and it's not. That's been proven long time ago. You can't get it from just being in the same room with somebody or touching them, shaking their hand, hugging, none of that. It's not. I mean, even though you still need to be aware, because being that it is in the blood, say if somebody has a cut and you have a cut, you don't want those two cuts to kind of, you know, come together with each other, because then that is a risk of exposure. But just generally being around somebody, it's not going to happen. And that's what a lot of people have fear. Like, I've heard stories of family members making their relatives eat off paper plates and eat with plastic utensils because they don't want them to get, you know, get anything on their real silverware and, you know, utensils and stuff, which is horrible. And even with my ex-husband, there was an incident. After me finding out that he did that to me, I found out that his own father had died from having HIV and then ultimately going into AIDS. And when he found out about his father, he treated his father as one of those people who had stigmas. He wouldn't go in the same room with his father. He wouldn't be around him. He treated him horrible, you know, and I hate to say it, but, karma did a 180 and came back and slapped him. And he ended up being infected, and he became now the person who people, you know, gave their stigma to, because one of his main reasons for not telling me about his status was because, oh, everybody I had ever told, they either left me or they stopped being my friend, and he didn't want me to leave him, you know, so he ended up getting that stigma towards him, you know.
You obviously have you're obviously totally committed towards the fight against AIDS and HIV, obviously, you know, because of what you've experienced and going through. So you're well informed, you're well educated on it. Somebody who has not been affected by this disease personally, who's not affected, what could they do to kind of help on the fight, in terms of the fight against HIV and AIDS?
I mean, the biggest thing that anybody can do who's not infected is, you know, they can still go out and educate others. You know, they can educate themselves to help educate others. You know, there's no limit to who can educate. You know, I was educating before I was diagnosed. So, I mean, there's no limit to what they can do. If they want to do it and want to get out there and do it, then do it. You know, don't say, oh, well, I'm not infected, or I don't know anybody who's infected. But guess what? We're all affected.
Right.
Because when it all boils down to it, it's something that the entire world is dealing with, and not just, you know, say just one little section of people. All races around the world are dealing with this epidemic. So everybody's affected. You know, because when we are dead and gone, guess what? We need those behind us to keep it going and keep the numbers going of newly infected decreasing and not increasing. You know, because they're even now, I was reading, they were talking about making, doing something with condoms where the condoms would have something that would have something where it would have like something that that for somebody who's already infected, it'll keep whoever they're having sex with from getting it, just something they put on the condoms. I was like, what? I read crazy stuff online every day just about things that they're trying to do and trying to invent and trying to create to keep the spread going. But just talking about it is going to do a lot, because when you talk about it, that's when people are going to ask questions. The more people you get to ask questions, the more people you get to educate.
Do you think enough pressure is being put on our political leaders, whether it be local or, you know, local or otherwise, to deal with this particular, to deal with this issue?
It's probably the last thing that they want to deal with in their day. And that's sad. They have so many other things that they're focusing on when they're in their position, especially with the political office. I mean, once people start actually getting out, if people start doing like they were doing in the late 70s, early 80s, and actually getting out and rallying and being a voice and being out there, oh, we'll get a lot of stuff done. But people are trying to get away from that now. Oh, they'll do, every now and then they may want to say, okay, let's go and do a march here or a march there. Back in the 70s and 80s, these people were doing it daily. You know, they were doing it so much till the government, all the way up to the presidents, had no choice but to pay attention. And they're not doing it now. Everything is more, okay, let's go and have a little conference here, let's go do this and that, instead of making it, you know, frequent. Yeah, okay, this day here, December 1st is World AIDS Day, that's when people want to do something. It needs to be something done every day of the year, not just on select days that they want to do it. Something that needs to be done all the time.
No question about it. What are your thoughts on the recent, and I shouldn't say recent because it's basically 3 years old, the recent national AIDS strategy that began in 2010 with the Barack Obama administration?
Oh gosh, I'm still waiting to see it's a lot of stuff. Like I said, I try to stay out of the whole politics thing. I'm not real political. I go and vote. I mean, I make sure I'm understanding who I'm voting for, of course,
right.
But I don't think that it should be up to any government officials on what is done for everybody else when it comes to the health care and stuff, because, you know, they're going to look out for themselves and their families anyway. We're going to always end up getting the short end of the stick on a lot of things. I mean, I don't even know how to address the whole thing he did in 2010, because I didn't even really get into it, because I'm like, oh, it's just going to be a whole other thing. Just like when who was the president in the early 80s?
Reagan.
When Reagan was, I mean, it was a whole media thing. That's how I see it. Oh, let me talk about this, because everybody's saying, oh, what are you going to do about HIV and AIDS? Well, let me just come up with something so I can say, okay, this is what we're going to do. You know, just like with anything, actions speak louder than words. You can put it on paper all you want to, but once you implement it, then that's when you got my attention.
No question about it. Here's, I told you before we were on the air about this particular program I was watching about it. It was called Endgame AIDS in Black America, on excellent program on Frontline, people on the Frontline program called that airs on PBS. They do a lot of different documentaries. They brought up a very interesting thing in terms of how to fight this epidemic, and it involved something that I think that we do have control over, and that is public health. And what I mean by that is, you know, there is this fake war on drugs, and it is a fake war on drugs, because we actually don't want drugs, people to stop selling drugs, because there's too much money in it. So instead of instead of acting like we're trying to stop
why
drugs,
say they legalize marijuana, money.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. there were some laws in San Francisco back in the 80s called paraphernalia laws, which prohibited people carrying around needles. So a couple of public, so what they end up doing is drug addicts and what have you said, okay, you want to do that, then we'll get our own needles. And with that became just an absolute spread of AIDS, because obviously they were using needles that were not clean. So some
right.
public health.
And guess, I'm sorry to cut you off, but they actually in Florida just said they were going to start doing that here in Florida. I'm like, wait a minute, they've been doing that. I know they've been doing it in New York for years, since like the 70s, the 80s. Like, I'm like,
right.
And now all of a sudden you want to do it in Florida. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you're talking about.
So now, of course, you have public health people saying, okay, let's not stop. We're not going to stop these people. We're not going to stop people from smoking crack. Let's just get that, put that goal aside. That's not going to happen. Let's be realistic about that. Let's treat them. Let's get them clean needles. Let's pass out condoms. Let's, this was brought up, it was brilliantly brought up on season 3 of The Wire with the whole Amsterdam
mm-hmm.
thing, when they wanted to make, instead of attacking, instead of, again, stopping them from selling drugs, they allowed them to sell drugs, which was a make-believe thing, allowing them moving drug zones to one particular zone to stop the crime rate. But one, that was based on one of the earlier mayors in Baltimore, Kurt Schmo, who came up with this idea, which was brilliant. He was far ahead of his time, came up with this idea, instead of making it a war on drugs, let's make it, let's make drugs a public health, let's make this a public health advocate, to where we have needle treatments, condom distribution, things of that nature. And to me, if we focused on that and giving out clean needles, and then what somebody will say is, well, you're advocating people doing drugs. People are going to do drugs anyway. People get high. This is
right.
why this drug business is a $500 billion business a year business anyway. So that but to me that would go a long way, and not so much stopping the AIDS epidemic, but that would put a dent into it, because there are a lot of, you think about how many needles exchanges are passed in terms of, this person,
wow.
that person, how many dirty needles. So I think this battle can be fought, within a community, and again,
right.
you wouldn't solve the entire process, but it would take, especially amongst the African American community, it would go a long way. I think we don't even need the government to do that. That's within our own communities. What is your thoughts on that?
If the community stepped in, they're saying, okay, bring in your dirty needles, we'll give you clean needles. How many, how many people are actually doing that? Who they so high and doped up, they not trying to go and get new needles. They're going to use what they have right there.
Exactly.
And they want that high right then and there. So it's like, yeah, you're saying, okay, we did this and we're doing that. And it all goes back to the government wanting to have that ultimate control, and not realizing that, hey, they're not going to always be able to have the control, because the people are going to still do what they want to do and when they want to do it. And it's just another way for them to say, hey, we're trying to make our impact in the community. All in the political game.
We've got about 1 minute here, Renee. Again, you can always catch this, the replay of this on Blog Talk Radio. It'll be posted on Facebook, Twitter, and what have you. Renee has done a tremendous job of educating not only, I'm certain, the audience, but educating me on things about AIDS. And again, that is to me the most important thing as far as dealing with any disease, as far as dealing with anything, is having, being educated on it. What you don't know can obviously will kill you, can and will kill you. Any last thoughts that you want to have before we head out in about 40 seconds overall?
Just make sure that you go and get tested and know your status, know your partner's status. If they don't want to tell you their status, then tell them you don't want to deal with them, basically. They can't disclose to you whether they're HIV positive or any STD, then tell them, hey, tell them Lady Bird said you could kick rocks and move on. And I guess, find me on Facebook. Lady Bird Live, Lady Bird 904. I'm on there. On Twitter, Lady Bird 904. Website, ladybirdlive.com. hotline 48475 Bird BYRD 2973.
Renee, thank you for joining me. I hope you got as much out of this as I got out of it. And certainly we'll do other things in the future as far as promoting education of this deadly virus. Thank you for joining me as always.
You're so welcome. Go Celtics.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
That was, of course, Renee Lady Bird Burgess educating us on the dreaded disease that is the fourth deadliest disease in the world in terms of HIV/AIDS and HIV virus. And I hope you were educated by this last hour. Enjoy the rest of your night. I will see you soon.